What does it even mean to live a legacy? Often we think of legacy in terms of what people might think of us when we're dead, but then we're dead. We're going to instead explore a living legacy. This is your host, Danielle Strickland. This is the Right Side Up podcast. And this is a partnership venture with World Vision, Strong Women, Strong World. This is going to be challenging and inspiring as we interview people from all over the world in all kinds of different sectors, living a life now that will matter later. A living legacy. Buckle up. This is sure to be challenging and inspiring. And I'm glad you're here.
Hey, welcome to the Right Side Up. And glad you're here. We are doing a whole podcast series called Living a Legacy. And that's as opposed to leaving a legacy, which is something you think about later. But what about right now? How do we live in such a way that it'll matter for the long term? And today's guest is Dale Hansen-Burke. She is an award-winning author, a writer, she's an editor, she's a business owner, she's foundation president, she's served on international boards, she's written 12 books, she's traveled to 62 countries. I mean, wow, she's MBA, she's served on, I can't go on and on, but she's incredible and she's here. And this is not her favorite format to be on a video and talking, just off the cuff. Her favorite thing to do is to write. And thankfully, she's written this, her latest book, Strong Girls, Strong World, which the notes to the link for that book and all the information about that is in the show notes. I encourage you to grab it and have a look. It's very insightful. We talk about the book, why she wrote it. We talk a little bit about what she would tell her earlier, younger self. We talk about what advice she might give to her granddaughter embarking in the world. And there's a lot of expertise and wisdom. There's a lot of kindness and a lot of grace in this conversation. And I know you're going to love it. So welcome, Dale Hansen-Burke. Hey, Dale, welcome to the Right Side Up podcast. I'm really thrilled that you're here and really just incredibly honored to have you on this podcast in light of all your experience and all your books and all the things that you've done and this particular new project that you've launched into the world, Strong Girls, Strong World. And this podcast is about living your legacy instead of just leaving a legacy. Well, no. So we're looking for clues and, you know, like insights and expertise and how we do that well now. So tell me a little bit, maybe just to get to know you a little bit, like tell me a little bit about your own background and how you got to launching this project, Strong Girls, Strong World.
Sure. Well, I'm a grandmother now, so it started really with my little 3.5-year-old granddaughter, whose name is Evie, who is amazing. And, I look at her and I imagine all the things she's going to do in the world. And it's fun to look at her and her potential. And I've had the opportunity to travel a lot with World Vision and other organizations and see other little girls around the world. And you know, little girls have so much potential and so much excitement and so much imagination, and just so much fun to see them, you know, imagining their future. And then realizing that so many girls are not going to have the opportunities that my little granddaughter will have. They won't get to live into all of that because they won't have, you know, the opportunities. They'll be discriminated against. They won't get to go to school. They won't have clean water. All of those kinds of things really... they just really struck me when I saw my granddaughter, because even though I think she's extraordinary, I think that there are many extraordinary little girls in the world, and we need to give them all the same opportunities. So that's how I got into this project and writing about it, because I do believe so much in the future, especially if girls are empowered and enabled. And it just seems so short-sighted of all of us to not be investing in little girls.
I guess that that's a fascinating thing to think about. You're naming sort of the lack of equity for little girls around the world, right? And how you see, I think that's really an interesting thing, that your connection and your great desire and love for your granddaughter is driving you to a connection and a deep love for everybody's little girl. You know, like that, that connection's not always the way it is, right? Like sometimes it's like, I love mine, and then like, oh, well, for you. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think I was fortunate in that I was exposed over the last, couple decades, really, to a world where I got to see these things. And I really feel like I'm so grateful that I began to understand what the world was really like and what reality was for so many women and so many girls around the world. So I feel very privileged for having received that opportunity. And then I feel really kind of a burden to share that with other people who don't get to see the same things that I've been able to see. And you know, to be able to say, look, there are things we can do. I mean, we really have opportunities here that we can make a difference in the lives of girls and women around the world.
You know, this is one of the things I really loved about your book, by the way. Thanks for it. I got a copy at Christmas time, mm-hmm. just before Christmas. And I loved how practical it is.
Yeah.
You know, like I think there's a lot of like when we deal with issues of the heart, which is really where you're starting is with your heart, mm-hmm. which I think is all great transformation starts with the heart. But you're really bringing your head to this heart issue. Like this is not just like you should feel passionate about girls. Like this is not just theories or like, you know, angst or challenges. You're actually saying, mm-hmm. here's what we could do.
Well, it's partially because I get very frustrated when those kinds of things come to me and I say, oh, this is a terrible situation. What am I going to do? And if we can't use that energy and actually put it to use, it just becomes frustration. And, you know, and sometimes we just, you know, we can't figure out what to do, so we don't do anything. So the idea that we could actually do things and that I could give people sort of a, you know, dot to dot kind of thing when we can say, okay, here's the problem. And guess what? I get to be part of the solution. I think that's so empowering. And I think it's so hopeful because we don't have to just look at the problems of the world and say, oh, that's just, you know, that's just a shame. We can actually say, this is something I can do. And when we do that, I think it's, you know, that talk about legacy. I mean, that's where legacy starts, when we're able to actually do something and actually make a difference in the lives of other people.
Mm-hmm. I love, you know, I mean, you cover such a broad range of things that where girls are at the center most affected by, but like such a broad range of topics and concepts mm-hmm. and things. You know, I met Margot Day with you at this event in New York. So it was interesting to see what she's doing and how she's joining forces in sort of the end of child marriage. And I mean, there's all, you know, FGM, you deal with a lot, clean water access, innovation and business. Like, are there ones in here? I mean, it's pretty comprehensive. So thank you for that. But are there ones where you're just like, I saw that? And that, or are they all things that you've seen and you're like, they all equally move you? Or is there something that you saw that moved you specifically? Or could you recount sort of experiences you've had?
Sure. I mean, I guess, you know, water to me is one of those things that it just is like a light bulb comes on when you realize how, you know, we turn on a faucet and water comes out and most of the world doesn't experience that. And when you see women and girls, going and gathering water, sometimes the water they're gathering is just awful. I mean, you just think, oh, no one should ever drink that water. And they're gathering it. It's the only water they have. And then they're walking miles back to their village to be able to use that water. And because of that, they can't go to school. They don't have time to go to school. They're exposed to predators. I mean, all the kinds of things that can happen if we are able to give them clean water or give them a well in their village. It's life-changing in so many different ways. And that's one of those things where I think even as I was writing the book, I was just beginning to understand the implications. Because we talk about drilling wells. I mean, that sounds like a great idea. Sure, everybody should have a well. But then when we realize what it means, you know, how that changes the lives of women and girls, that's, you know, that's just amazing. So, I mean, that's one of the ways that I personally invest, because I think wells are one of the best things we can do for women and girls. We can give them access to clean water.
Yeah, you know, fascinating that idea that like the small impact and the exponential results, right? Like that's that, like this is not that big of a deal, although it is a nice and beautiful thing to give yourself to, but like to contribute some money for a well to be built in another country feels like that's just a nice thing to do. But then when you actually think through the exponential impact mm-hmm. of that and all that that means,
right.
That's maybe what people can't really quite connect with that you're trying to paint a picture of in this book.
Yeah, it is. And it's also, I mean, one of the things that one of the principles my father always taught me was that we should never give just to make ourselves feel better. We should give because we really are making a difference in the life of somebody. And I remember him teaching me that when we were literally on the street in a city and a man came up and asked him for a handout. And I think he asked him for a quarter. I was pretty young at the time. And I remember him stopping and talking to the man, even introducing himself and telling him his own name, and then giving him $5. And I was just astounded. I said, "Dan, why did you do that? I mean, he asked for a quarter. We gave him $5. And he said, "You know, we really have to make sure that if we give to somebody, we're actually helping them. We're not just making ourselves feel better." And I always remembered that because I thought, well, it's easy to just contribute to something, but it's more important also to understand why you're contributing. It's important to understand what difference that really makes in the lives of people. And so that's part of what I'm trying to do, even in my book, is help people, you know, again, connect the dots and say, all right, if I give to this project, it's not just making me feel better. This is how it's changing lives, and this is why it's important. And I think that's an important principle because it really does empower you even as a donor.
Mm. I also love, because I think one of the greatest adversaries we have in this particular age we're in or era we're living is this fatalistic mindset, you know, where like nothing actually works and it's not going to get better and there's nothing we can really do. And there's been this critique, you know, of aid and aid organizations and stuff in a culture, which I think has been good because we've learned a lot around how we do things. But what I love about what you're offering here, and maybe even your own experience as like a journalist, you know, where your mind is constantly thinking about these, like, how does this make sense? What is the impact of this? How does this work? Is that you're really, you know, just punching fatalism in the gut. Because you're literally going like, oh, no, it does matter. And here's how it matters. And here's how we, you know, change the needle in terms of how people are living.
I think I've been, again, fortunate to be able to see things that are often so simple that you just go, oh, my goodness. Like I tell one of the stories in the book I tell is about these girls who were walking to school and they had a hard time sometimes the boys were giving them trouble on the way to school and they were having some violence issues. And somebody came up with the idea to teach these girls karate. And they taught them karate out in the open so that everybody could see them after school. And they only let the girls come and take these karate classes. And early on, they taught these girls to break boards in half. And so as they started taking these lessons, I mean, the guys started coming around and watching them. And the girls are breaking these boards in half. And the boys are going, oh, wow, we better not mess with these girls. And I just thought that was so brilliant because the girls were empowered then to feel like, wait, you know, we have the power to walk and not be afraid. And the boys were like respectful of the girls. The girls never had to use that. They didn't. I asked the girls one time, you know, had they ever used karate against the boys? And they said, oh, no, we didn't have to. They just learned to be afraid of us. And it was, you know, to me, it was one of those things where you just go, that's brilliant. I mean, that's such a brilliant, simple solution to make the girls feel strong and the boys to recognize that the girls have strength. And, you know, I just loved it. I mean, I just thought that was a very simple way to deal with an issue.
Mm, that is cool. I often am amazed at how, you know, it's not rocket science. It just needs to be done. You know, it's just intentionality, right? To actually do the things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. When you talk about the privilege of proximity, really, that's what, you had this privilege to see for yourself. How does that happen in your life? How does that become something that's a part of your life?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because it really started with a loss in my life. I lost a baby. Actually, my youngest son was a twin, and I lost his twin sister. Oof. And I was so overcome with grief at the time. And someone from World Vision was talking to me, and they mentioned that 35,000 babies die every day from preventable causes at that point. And it was a statistic that really struck me because I thought 35,000 other mothers are feeling the same pain that I'm feeling. Oof. That's amazing. And there's nothing I can do to save my own baby, but maybe I can help invest in the lives of these other babies and women and make things better. And so I got involved with World Vision and other organizations and really just tried to tell stories as much as I can. I mean, that's my skill that I have is to write and to tell stories. And, you know, it's interesting because now if you ask people how many babies die from preventable causes, it's down to 14,000 a day. So it went from 35,000 to 14, and we can keep going.
Yeah.
You know, we can keep making it better.
Yeah.
And it's not that I personally was involved in that, but I watched it be able to happen over the years. And I watched progress be made. And partially, you know, the ability to go and be involved and to tell stories was my way of contributing to making these things better, helping women, telling their stories, sharing their grief. And to me, that was a great privilege.
Mm. I have this understanding, I think I shared earlier, that the heart is the way to transformation.
Sure.
Of course, our Western mindset says the head is the way, but actually the heart is the way, and the head catches up when the heart is driving us. So that's a very powerful, you know, I felt something and I felt grief.
Sure.
And I felt the depth of that loss and then connected on that level first. You know, like
right.
I actually think that somehow that emotional connection and that heart engagement is absolutely key. It's not enough, but I think it is the start, you know?
Yeah, I really do too. And I think when we talk about legacy, I think, you know, as someone who believes in God and someone who believes in the way God works in our lives, I think our legacy often comes out of our points of pain, our places where we feel the great pain, we feel broken, we understand how other people feel. And for us to be able to then give back by helping in those moments, in those ways, is really so holy and so, you know, just redemptive. And I think it's just a wonderful thing, because I don't think we're really at our best trying to be strong and work out of our strength. I think we're at our best when we're really being open and broken and saying, I want to respond from those places and I want to be as authentic as I can in responding. Because I know how it feels. I know what pain feels like.
You know, I was talking to Catherine Compton about how, just by happenstance, really, she discovered in the AIDS crisis that women responded. There was a lack of response from a lot of other leaders, you know, a lot of stigma, but women actually just jumped right in.
Right.
And so we were talking about that capacity women have, maybe from their own marginalization or oppression, mm-hmm. or brokenness in their life, to actually respond to marginalization, oppression, and brokenness in sort of a different way.
Yep.
You know, from this felt, I know what that's like to feel that way, and how powerful that is to change things. Hey, I hope you're really enjoying this episode. It's been a joy to do. And Dale has written this book, Strong Girls, Strong World. And we want to make sure you know a little bit more about it. In this book, Dale draws on her international leadership and reporting experience to offer personal insights that we can all use as a roadmap to understanding the issues girls face, and in tangible ways, we can each make a difference. Filled with personal stories, hope-filled examples, and specific opportunities, readers will discover how to help girls stay in school and avoid child marriage and female genital mutilation, why girls are the most vulnerable refugees and how we can protect them, what leading organizations like World Vision, UNICEF, CARE, Medical Teams International, Opportunity International, MAP, International Compassion, and others are doing to change the lives of girls, and dozens of specific and practical ways you can make a difference. Investing in the life of a girl can bring about global change. In Strong Girls, Strong World, you'll find out how to take the first steps. I highly recommend the book, StrongGirlsStrongWorld.com, or anywhere books are sold. And I know you're going to enjoy that and dream with us and then work with us to make this world a place where girls thrive.
I think that's true. And I think we also respond from thinking about our own children. A lot of times, I think during the AIDS crisis, for example, women who had children who were suffering or were dealing with it, suddenly said, "Oh, wait, that's something. I mean, I love this person. It's not something over there. It's something here, and I want to respond because that's my child. And other people also are losing children." And that was, you know, I think one of the ways that we started a very powerful response during the AIDS crisis.
What are your greatest challenges or, you know, sort of temptations that get in your way of living a legacy and using what you have for good for others?
I think probably the greatest challenges I have are probably similar to others. You start looking around and you see other people doing things and you say, oh, I wish I could do that. I wish I was like that person. Even as a writer, I mean, I'm a very simple writer. I write very simply. I have friends who are just glorious writers. I mean, they write sentences that just make you cry. They're just so beautiful. And I'm not that kind of writer. And there have been times when I've said, you know, oh, I'm just never going to write another thing again because I just... my writing is just so mundane. And yet I've learned that my simple writing is what helps people understand things that are complex sometimes. And so sometimes I get out of that place where I'm supposed to be and I look around and think, oh, I want to do that. I wish I could do that. And that is when I have to say, no, this is what I'm supposed to be here to do. And I may not win a prize for my writing, but I can help explain things to people, and that's what I'm here to do.
No.
So I'm tempted often to, you know, to try to do something that's not really in my zone, and that's, I think, what we all tend to do at times.
Yeah, that's a powerful, like, even just self-awareness thing too, right? Like, the comparison trap, right, of, like, you're not like these other people, but also to know that your strength and your gift is this is what you're offering, this is what I do, and this is what I do well. So then this is what I'm going to offer, is this thing I do well. That's hard when we're in a world, especially I think for women, when we're in a world of comparison.
I think that's definitely hard, especially for women. And I think one of the ways that it's really been brought home to me is we were looking through some old pictures, and I, you know, looked at myself at like 40, and I remember thinking, how much I felt inadequate, how I thought, oh, I'm too fat, I'm too this, I'm too that. I look back at me and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, girl, like, why weren't you just happy with who you were? You know, we can't, it's hard for us to live fully in who we are at the moment at times. And it's not to say we shouldn't be trying to be better, but there is, I think, a temptation to think we should be like somebody else. And not fully live ourselves.
I feel like that might be a lifelong challenge to be in the place you're at now and be good with it, you know, and again, that not be complacent with it, not like this is all there is and I'm never going to, you know, achieve anything else or do anything else, but just be like, this is where I am now and it's good.
It's interesting how, I just turned 70, and this might be the first time that I feel, yeah, it's okay to be 70. It's okay to be here, and be grateful that you're healthy and that you've got good friends and family, and just be grateful. Gratitude is such an important part of this, and I don't think we can really give back to others until we're grateful for everything that's been given to us. I think that's part of legacy as well, is just a sense of gratitude. And giving out of that.
And you said a couple times now, which I really love, is this great privilege or these great opportunities and privilege you've had of seeing things and going places and being part of these organizations and meeting people on the ground in difficult circumstances comes equally with this responsibility, or at least a felt responsibility, that this privilege and opportunity is for something greater than you. And I guess in some ways, I feel like that's a really great description of legacy.
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, I guess I'd start out by saying, I really do believe that most people, given the right information, would want to do the right thing. I mean, I really do believe in the power of giving people information and giving them stories that they can relate to. And because not everyone is going to get to go to all of these places and see all of these things, I really value the ability to try to help someone see what I've seen. And because I do believe that they will respond out of their heart and out of their goodness and will want to do whatever they can to help someone. And so, you know, that's part of what motivates me is that, you know, I'm not trying to persuade someone. I'm trying to just help share what I've seen and give them eyes to see what the world is like, because we live in such a limited slice of reality.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how many reality television shows we watch, that's not reality. You know, this is a very small slice of the real world. And to be able to see more of it is, it's humbling. And it also gives perspective that we all really need.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been to 62 countries.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
Are there standouts? Are there places you keep going back to? Are there, you know, are there ones specifically that are like heart connected to you? Or is it all just exploring?
No, I mean, I spent a lot of time in Zambia. I actually worked with some people there on a foundation for maternal health. And I love the Zambians. I love Zambia. It's just a wonderful country, and the people are just kind and good and gentle, and you know, they do the best with what they can, and they have they live in great poverty, but they are also very generous to one another. I'm always impressed by the fact that people who live in poverty, and that's their sort of ongoing reality, are still so generous. They're just amazingly generous and also amazingly grateful. And that's one of the things I used to just enjoy about the people that I would meet in Zambia. They would be, you know, they'd be grateful that their children were not sick. They didn't see, you know, in the Western world, we tend to think, oh, no, this terrible thing happened to me. That's so unfair. And in places where people are living in difficult situations every day, they don't think when bad things happen, it's unfair. They have bad things happening to them every single day. And so they're grateful all the time. I mean, It's just so interesting to me how people can be so full of gratitude when they have so little, and yet so many of us have so much and lack that gratitude on a daily basis. So for me, you know, again, going to a place where some people would say, oh, that's such a, you know, people living with so little there and they have such difficulty, it was always such an uplifting experience for me and really just a blessing to be able to be with people there.
Yeah, I find that it's always this weird dynamic that you go to give and then you end up receiving so much more.
Yeah.
And you just think, oh, yeah, my gift is so little compared to what I received. Yeah. What would you be telling yourself if you were starting again? Like, what would be the big, especially in terms of this, like, living a legacy rather than just leaving one? What would you do different if you could? Or what would you advise others to do if they're starting out on this journey now?
I guess I would say, I'm not one to look back that much, but again, I think I'd go back to just enjoy where you are at the time. Don't worry too much about the future. Really invest. I mean, you know, I look at my daughter-in-law with two little kids, and I know she feels so inadequate, and yet I look at her and I'm just in awe of all the love she's giving these children. And that's where she is right now, and that's what she's doing, and she's doing a great job of it. And, you know, I think we just tend to want to be at the next stage or think, oh, this stage is going to last forever. Time goes very quickly. I can say that from being 70 now and thinking in my head, I'm still, you know, it's just 32 the other day. I don't know what happened. So I think it's just being able to get up every morning, be grateful for where you are, and do the best you can where you are, and give yourself grace. I mean, I think especially as women, we need to give ourselves grace and say, you know what, I'm doing the best I can. I'm going to do whatever I can to make the world a better place and care for myself and my family. And then I'm not going to worry about it too much, because we tend to worry so much about what we're not doing and who we aren't. And, you know, we need to just embrace who we are and be happy with that.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good challenge. That's a hard one. That's a hard one.
I think,
yeah, but it's
hard
good.
For women. Mm-hmm. You know, I think women are so hard on themselves for the most part. And
well, and even I had a friend who turned 50, and she said, it's literally taken me 50 years to even just be at home in my body. And I was like,
yeah.
Wow. So like even that like body reality, and that then you think about your soul and your spirit and all the other relationships and stuff. But just that idea of coming to a place where you're like, I'm aware, I'm listening, I'm enough. You know, this is a 50-year journey. But how to begin to cultivate that
God,
earlier. Yeah.
And God knew what he was doing. You know,
right.
God, you know, you are created in a special way, and there's no one else like you. And that's a good thing.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to try to look like someone else or be like someone else. Just fully embrace who you are and be comfortable with that. And that, boy, that takes a lot off of the plate. I mean, it gives you a lot more freedom to just then give back and be grateful.
So Evie turns 21 and she's thinking of pursuing, you know, college or, you know, and wondering, she's 21 years old. She comes to you and says, okay, what do I do with my life? What should be driving me? What do you say to her?
Well, first of all, I hope I'm around when she's 21. That's the problem with being an older grandparent. I would tell her to be herself. I would tell her to find the places that she experiences joy, find the places that she feels good about herself. Right now, you turn on music and she starts to dance, and she just loves to dance. And I hope she continues to feel that sense of joy in something that she can embrace. And whatever it is, whether she ends up loving math and wants to, you know, pursue math, and somebody says, well, that's not a very good path, because how are you going to make money, you know, doing that? I mean, there are going to be all these voices that are going to say to her, well, don't do the thing that gives you joy, because it's not practical, or it's not going to make you money, or it's not this, or it's not that. And I think what I want her to be able to know is that whatever gives her joy and brings out the best in her and makes her just smile and laugh is worth pursuing. It's because it was created in her to have that response. That was a created response that, you know, just comes from within, and she should embrace that. And that's what I would hope for every little girl out there, is that they would, you know, they would be able to really pursue and enjoy their lives, and wouldn't have so many obstacles that they're just not able to continue to move forward.
I love that, you know, and just realize the competing voices, you know, of you should do this, or you ought to do this, or responsibility would say to do this, or, you know, this is impossible, whether those voices are internalized or external from culture. But that idea of like, what is, if you could dial in without any competing voices and just say, what makes you feel most fully alive, and figure out how to do that. What a great, that's,
and as a girl, be able to do it without people saying, oh, that's not what girls do, or girl, you know, I mean, that whole, there's a whole nother overlay. Well, girls don't do that, you know, and that's a terrible thing that we've done in society, is to tell girls that there are certain things that they don't do, that boys do certain things and girls do certain things.
Did you feel that when you were young?
I did, although, you know, I had a father who was, I really had an extraordinary father, who really was very good at letting me kind of be who I was. I was much more of a tomboy, and I didn't hear any, you know, feedback that was a problem. He would take me to his office, you know, and on Saturday mornings, he would go to his office to do some extra work, and he'd bring me along, and you know, he was kind of modeling that I could do that. I could do that. I could be a business person if I wanted to be. He always encouraged me. And my sister as well. And I really appreciate the fact that I don't look back on that. I mean, I certainly grew up in a church where I was told, oh, you know, women don't preach or women don't do certain things. But, you know, I don't, in my own family, I was not so, you know, so restricted. So I appreciate the fact that I wasn't.
Yeah, that's cool. And then I would imagine that also, that, you know, beautiful biblical theology of liberation for people to do whatever God's called them to do also affected all the areas eventually, I'd imagine.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember, you know, feeling frustrated at times just in my church, but also then saying, all right, well, then this is not the place for me. And having enough of my family's support to say that, to say, okay, well, if I can't use my gifts here, then I'll go somewhere else where I can use my gifts.
Uh-huh.
And that not being sort of a negative thing, but being a positive thing, just saying, well, God will find a way for you to use those gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that so much. And then even that, like, advice to your, you know, either future granddaughter or your past self to say, like, whatever that is that you're supposed to do, figure out a way to do that. And that can look like a million different things, but whatever that is, do that. I love it so much. That's great. Any other final thoughts on living a legacy from your perspective or anything about Strong Girls, Strong World? How do people get this book? What are your best hopes? You know, if you would allow yourself to dream about what this book could do in the world, what does that look like?
Well, first of all, you can get the book on Amazon or in any, right now, I think it's Sam's Club and Barnes & Noble and fortunately a lot of different booksellers, but
and we'll
easily put, on Amazon.
We'll have the link in the show notes, guys, to the actual website for Strong Girl, Strong World, the site, and it'll lead you everywhere. So just so you know, if you need it.
Great. But, you know, I think there, when you start writing a book sometimes, and you've written books, so you know this, you imagine maybe it's going to sell a lot of copies. But what I really hope is that the people who are going to read it, light bulbs come on in their head, and they say, oh, now I understand, and now I'm empowered to do something that makes me feel like I'm able to live a legacy, or I'm able to make a difference in the world. I mean, how many of us say, I want to make a difference in the world, and we just can't figure out how to do it? And my hope is that this book will help women and men, anybody who reads the book, to take action, to take that first step, to make a difference, and to really change the lives of girls all over the world. Because I truly believe that if enough of us get involved, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. I hope so, too. And a shout out for that book again. Guys, get it. It's very practical. It's insightful. It's really just like a very, like, I think what you said earlier in this interview about how one of your gifts is to take very complex things and make them simple to understand. You've done that beautifully here. It's a very good insight into some of the most complex issues that are facing people living in extreme poverty and really hurting girls. So it'd be great for you to just pick one thing. I mean, I think there's so many different things in this book that you could just do, and it wouldn't even be rocket science. You know, it's not complex or difficult or hard. It's some simple things you can do to engage and be part of the change. So thanks for writing it, Del. Thanks for being on this podcast and sharing a little bit more of your heart and story.
This has been great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, appreciate you so much.
Hey, speaking of empowering women, the voices of women are often silenced or unwanted or unsupported or untrained. And we felt like it was time to stop that. So we started a thing called Women Speakers Collective. Women Speakers Collective is a global coaching community. So it's once a month, a coaching and a collective that you join. So you join with other women, but also you're coached in all things communication. And I would say even leadership, all things communication and leadership, because it's all around, you know, knowing who you are and learning about your own skills and then being able to partner and network and collaborate and then using your voice effectively for change and in the sphere that you're called to. People in business take this, people who are preaching, you know, who are on stages, who are doing public presentations, nonprofit leaders. We've had a mayor We often offer these things called boot camps. Those are 2 days, like jam-packed communication training. So if that's your style, you could look for one of those coming soon. If you need an ongoing support, then the coaching community is for you. All the things. I mean, there's so many things I can't even begin to explain it, but it's an incredible global community of females raising their voice and trying to be the change they want to see in the world and liberating other women in the process. So you're going to want to check that out at womenspeakerscollective.com.